Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Welcome to the Friday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and hey, you know, I said Friday. You heard me.
Start spreading the news.
Oh, you know what that means. Schomburg Stu is here. How you doing, Stu?
All right, and I'm thinking maybe you should change the name of the song to My Kind of Town, Chicago. Because we're closer to Chicago than New York.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it was probably the only one Dan could find, so that's just what we ended up going with, you know. But if you'd like to call in the podcast, talk to Stu or I, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need? Oh, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so something will pop up there sometime tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, hit the link. That'll take you over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, we'd greatly appreciate it. But don't forget, we have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Sadly, still no Stu on Twitter, but I am at Burke Time, and feel free to send me anything you want to mention to Stu, and I will pass it along to you. So there you go.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, yeah. You know, obviously, you know, I'm not hugely keeping up with the NBA. I just kind of catch the highlights here and there or what's going on. And after game four, which the Nuggets won, it was the first game the Nuggets actually beat the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. All I heard about was the Lakers crying and LeBron crying that he's not getting enough foul calls. And of course, you know, the Mickey Mouse Network is backing him up because they desperately need the Lakers in the finals just to try to pump any rating out of this pitiful NBA season that nobody is watching. So they played game five last night, and wouldn't you know it, Stu? LeBron went to the free throw line 14 times. You know, it drives me nuts when these guys do this. You know, the Lakers shot 35 free throws in the game. The Nuggets shot 23. The Lakers only won by 6 points, so it was clear that the free throw discrepancy was the difference in this game. And it's sad that the NBA kowtows to these guys. Especially with the way fouls are now. I saw LeBron knock Jamal Murray to the floor last night, and there was no call. But I think somebody breathed heavy on LeBron, and they called a foul.
Well, you shouldn't be surprised about that, though, are you? That happened that way?
No, but, you know, it's just incredibly sad, and it just makes me not want to watch even more than I already don't want to watch. I mean, here you got the guy who's supposed to be the greatest player in the world, and I think he complains – more than anybody else. I mean, I don't hear anybody else who's this big of a crybaby, but, you know, this guy cries about everything. Oh, I didn't win the MVP. Oh, I didn't get enough foul calls. Oh, I have to tie my own shoes. Oh, I'm not going to leave Cleveland. Don't worry, guys. Yeah, you only did it to him twice. So, it's baffling to me that, you know, everybody's so in love with this guy when, you know, it's quite clear that he's just a jerk.
Well, on the plus side, though, the NBA and ESPN got their wish.
Well, almost. The Lakers have to win one more game. So.
Well, you know, it's a foregone conclusion.
Yeah. You know, oh, well, I knew back when the season was actually really supposed to start that the Lakers were going to the finals. You know, I mean, you can go back and listen to the podcast. I actually, one of the women I work with goes to Vegas every year for a bowling tournament. And it, unfortunately, it got canceled. I already had planned to give her money, and she was going to get me a ticket for the Lakers to win the championship. Because I guaranteed this back in, I don't know, April or whatever, that the Lakers would flat out win the title, because it's what the NBA thinks it needs right now. And they, you know, them, between them and the Mickey Mouse Network, they don't really understand how to build new stars. So if you ever watch any of their coverage, you would honestly think that LeBron James is almost the only player in the league, because you rarely see them or hear them talk about anybody else. You know, unless they have a monumental game like Jamal Murray has done a time or two in these playoffs.
Well, I'm sure that the price you would have received if you had that the Lakers winning it all wouldn't have been very high. I'm sure they were the prohibitive favorite anyway.
You know, actually, I think at the time it was 10 or 12 to 1, which I would have taken. So
yeah, that would have been a good odds. I'm surprised the odds were that high.
Well, you know, nothing had started yet, so it wasn't quite as obvious to everybody else. So, you know, I was a little ahead of the curve, because, you know, I'm the one who still believes the NBA is fixed. You know, and it's difficult to, you know, kind of point me in any other direction with, you know, some of the garbage they've pulled these last few years. So.
Well, the question I have is that, will it be a competitive finals once the Eastern Division is settled?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, I don't think so, because, you know, they want LeBron to win. And I think what they might do is they may try to stretch it out a little, hoping they can get people to watch. But I saw where the conference finals ratings are down 17%. So, I mean, there is just nobody cares about the NBA, you know, as of right now. It's just, you know, the wrong time, or however you want to look at it, you know, just the way it's went or the way it's worked. You know, nobody's watching, and they're not going to watch. It's just that simple.
Yeah, I'm wondering what kind of an impact the NHL finals has on the NBA semifinals, if they've eaten into the ratings or not.
Yeah, you know, it's always difficult to get any NHL ratings because, you know, since they're not on the Mickey Mouse Network, they don't talk about them. You know, no matter how good the games are, you rarely, if ever, hear anybody mention the NHL on that network. So it makes it difficult for them to, you know, really almost kind of accomplish anything, you know, no matter how good the play is or whatever else is going on, because they just, you know, they can't get the coverage. You know, they're on an NBC network, but,
right,
you know, NBC, you know, while they do have the sports station, which is dedicated solely to sports, it's not on par with where the Mickey Mouse Network is.
No, right.
So, you know, and I don't believe they have a nightly highlight show. So, you know,
you think the fans, by the way, even know who's playing in the NHL finals, the average sports fan?
Yeah, well, you know, humorously, and Dan and I talked about this earlier in the week, I was watching one of the shows I actually like on the Mickey Mouse Network, and they had a guy on who, now you got to realize, this guy has a podcast through them. He appears on all their different shows to do commentary, flat out admitted that he does not know who's in the NHL finals. And this guy talks about sports for a living and gets paid for it and didn't know.
You'd have to ask yourself why a supposedly knowledgeable announcer who makes his living at covering sports would even admit that on national TV.
You know, honestly, I think it's because they know on the network he's on, they don't care about hockey, and they can just kind of, you know, pretty much do whatever they want when they come to the coverage. They do still employ Barry Melrose, and, you know, every once in a while he'll pop up on a Sports Center, and, you know, give a, you know, give a comment about what's going on or something like that. But, you know, it's difficult to find serious NHL coverage there. And, you know, even so, when you get a highlight, you may get one goal, and if they remember to tell you who won, they'll do that. But other than that, you don't get that much. They want to talk to you about the NBA and the NBA only. You know, because
yeah,
that's where all their money is.
Yeah, you know, I still consider the four major team sports in the United States is hockey, basketball, baseball, and football. No matter how you slice it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, unfortunately, hockey has kind of slid to a distant fourth. So.
Yeah, and it's always been well covered in the Chicago area.
Yeah, you know, I think the better your team is, the better you cover it. You know, I mean, like, humorously, Tampa Bay right now, you know, they've got a team in the NHL Finals and, you know, the baseball team with the best record in the American League. So, you know, for whatever reason, and of course they have Tom Brady, so oddly all they really talk about is football. So that's just kind of weird that, you know, I think the Buccaneers are 1-1 and Brady hasn't played great, but that's all they want to talk about when they have two teams that could actually win championships.
In years past, when there were fans in the stands, did the Buccaneers sell out their football games?
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty sure they did. You know, if not, they were pretty close. So it's, you know, it's always hard to tell because, you know, I think with the NHL, they pretty much sell every ticket. It's just the question of who shows up to the game. So
yeah, that's exactly right. Well, they want the games televised in the local market too. And if there's 2,000 unsold seats, they're going to buy it up so they can show the game to their regional audience on TV.
So, yeah, and, you know, that's pretty much how, you know, most networks go. So they say, you know, well, it's a sellout, but, you know, you don't honestly know.
Well, at least they get close to a sellout, unlike the baseball team, which no matter how good they are, does very poor at the box office.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, that, you know, the best thing for the Rays this year is the fact that they didn't have to sell tickets. You know, because, like you said, no matter what the team does, and again, they have the best record in the American League, they're going in the playoffs as the number one seed, no, you know, they would still be drawing 10,000 people. And, it, you know, again, it's the weirdest thing. It's like we give you a winner, and you don't come out and support it.
Yeah, and that's very unusual because most sports towns that cover Major League Baseball or anything else, if you've got a winner, normally your attendance is going to increase. But it doesn't seem that way there.
No, you know, and I mean, there are a couple towns, you know, for whatever reason, Cleveland can't draw. Well, the Indians can't draw. You know, the Browns do really well, but the Indians can't get flies, you know, and they've been a winning franchise. You know, and I know in Atlanta, nobody draws no matter what you're doing. You know, I mean, the NHL team drew so badly there that they felt that, you know, it draws better in Winnipeg. Now, obviously, there's a huge difference in size between Atlanta and Winnipeg. So that'll tell you how much the Atlanta fans like the NHL. Because they moved the team to Winnipeg, so.
And MLB as well, because didn't they just win their third straight division title? And I'm sure if there were fans in attendance, they would be nowhere near to being a capacity.
Yeah, no, you know, and they never are. You know, and I know they're getting another new stadium here. It may be next year or the year after. So, you know, I don't know if that will help them. And I know that's part of Tampa's problem. You know, Dan actually went there last summer and explained that, you know, not only is it incredibly difficult to get to the stadium, you know, between traffic and the route you got to go and everything else going on, but it's just a terrible stadium to, you know, watch a game in. So, you know, they've got a lot against it, but they've been turned down multiple times, you know, by the city to put up a new stadium. So, I won't be surprised when, if and when we get things back up and running and we're back to normal. You know, I know baseball wants to move back to Montreal. I won't be surprised if the Rays are the team that end up there.
Yeah, this time they'll be in the American League as compared to when they were previously in the National League for so many years. But I can see that happening.
Yeah,
definitely see that happening.
NL East or the NL East, where, you know, they would have the kind of natural rivals. So.
Yeah, exactly. And it's too bad that that they had to leave, because they always seem to have a lot of fan interest there, but not quite enough to sustain a team before they had to move out of town.
Yeah, well, you know, their problem was the same thing. You know, that stadium was a piece of crap, and they couldn't get a new one built. You know, and then once people stopped showing up, you're basically putting the team out of business. But then when they leave, everybody cries.
Yeah,
it's like, well, you
exactly
didn't go watch
right.
It anyway.
What do you think?
You know, but now apparently they have a new stadium.
Yeah.
So
yeah, well, that'll be interesting to see if how that'll impact the fans when the fans are allowed to come back to the stadium. Now next year, for example, in Chicago, they might let the season ticket holders in, but that's about it.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll see how it goes with the playoffs, because they are going to allow a limited number of fans in. You know, and again, eventually, you got to let everybody get back to living their normal lives, whether we've solved this thing or not, because it's, you know, it's getting to the point where it's just, you know, ridiculous.
Yeah, it's
so
bad. Do you anticipate a rating, huge ratings for the MLB for next week when the playoffs start?
No, I don't think so. You know, I mean, obviously they'll do better than the NBA, but I think a guy sitting in a chair watching paint dry would do better than the NBA. It's not going to be huge just because of the way the season was structured. And the fact that, you know, not only is everything cheapened by the fact that they played 60 games, but there's 16 teams in the playoffs. You know, half of the league makes the playoffs this year. You know, there's going to be teams that are either under 500 or at 500 that get in. You get nothing for winning your division. It's meaningless, you know, because you're not hosting games outside of the first round. So you don't get anything for that. And, you know, I mean, I think just fans are going to get frustrated. And, I mean, obviously locally, you know, you're going to watch your team. But once your team gets knocked out, I don't think people are really going to care who wins.
How are they structuring the first round? Is it 1-1-1, home team, road team, home team, if necessary?
No, the highest ranked team hosts all three games.
Wow.
There's no travel involved, and they play 3 days in a row starting Tuesday. And then they go right into what would be the division series. And they'll play 5 days in a row if necessary, and then they'll go right into the division, you know, the championship series, and they'll play 7 days in a row if necessary. There are no days off till the World Series.
So they're going to have a traditional World Series, 2-3-2 with the days off, as normal.
I believe so. I haven't seen the schedule yet. But it won't be 2-3-2 because they're just playing in Texas. So there's no
right.
Travel involved. Everything is at Ranger Stadium. The only difference will be who happens to be the home team that night.
Well, that's important in a close game. If you're the home team, you get the last bad advantage. And,
you know, I'm,
by the way, do you know whether or not they're going to have that second in the playoffs? Are they going to have an extra inning game? Will it start out with a runner on second base, or is that going to be eliminated for the playoffs?
You know, I haven't seen, and that's what I'm wondering, that they don't use that stupid rule. Obviously, we don't have to deal with the double header rule, because, you know, there are no doubleheaders in the postseason. But, yeah, I hope we don't have that dumbass runner on second base in extra inning thing. And I haven't seen what they're using for format, and I haven't heard anybody say yet. So I'm kind of where you are. I'm just kind of waiting and seeing what they're doing.
Because that would be bad in the playoffs. I mean, I could see it because of the 60-game season, but in the playoffs, you would think that they would eliminate that rule.
I would hope so. I hope they're smart enough to do that. Unfortunately, they're not always that bright, so it could be bad.
Yeah, it's. It would be bad if they included it for the playoffs, because who wants a game decided that way in a playoff situation? And I could see it maybe during the regular season because of the compressed schedule they had, and make all the games count, and not to have to wear the players out playing a 16, 17-inning game. The last I heard, by the way, I think we talked about this, 13 innings was the max in the extra innings this season so far.
Yeah. I mean, could you imagine Game 7 of the World Series going to extra innings and being decided because there was a runner on second base to start the inning?
Yeah, that's why I'm wondering that maybe that rule will be rescinded for the World Series at least, if not for all the playoffs.
That would just be a nightmare if you could. If that's the way it was going to go down, I mean, it would be a huge joke for.
It would be a really face to baseball, wouldn't it? It really would. I would mar from the intensity of the playoff games, and then that would. I just hope that rule is not in place for the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm looking here, and they don't seem to have. Anything set up with the way it's going to work rule-wise, but I'm assuming sooner or later we're gonna hear it, how it's gonna work out. But yeah, I just hope they're not stupid and do that.
First of all, as you pointed out quite correctly, the playoffs are going to be diluted anyway initially, and at least in the first round or two with sub-500 teams actually playing in the playoffs.
It's gonna sadly this is gonna turn out to be a joke in a lot of people's eyes, and for me, I don't care who wins the World Series, because in my eyes they're not going to be a World Series champion. They're going to celebrate and they're going to get the rings and all the stuff that goes with it. But, it's been such a truncated season that there's just no way. 60, you didn't even play half a season.
No.
And with the way the playoffs are set up, in reality, the team that has the best pitching is going to win. Because you're not getting any off days, so I won't be surprised to see, a team like the Cleveland Indians end up in the World Series. Because if you look at their starting rotation, 1 through 5, they may be the best in baseball.
They have
the weird part
is sure one of the top
guys. So.
I think there are going to be some upsets in the first round, because in a 3-game series, everything is up for. I mean, anything can happen. Flukes can happen, right? I'm anticipating some of the better teams being upset in the first round because it's only a 3-game series.
Yeah, I fully expect the Cubs to get beat. They'll probably win game one behind Darvish, but then they'll probably easily get beat in games 2 or 3 and go home early. No matter who they're facing, I think right now they're scheduled to face the Marlins, but I don't think it matters who it faces because, Kyle Hendricks hasn't been very good. I know he was good his last outing, but you go back in his last 5 starts and he's been terrible. And My guess is John Lester is number three, and he doesn't scare anybody anymore. So, you know, I won't be surprised to see them go out very quickly. And, you know, like I believe the Rays will play the Indians with the way it's set up right now. Cleveland gets in as the eight or maybe the seven. And I don't want to play them in the first round. You know, they're going to have Shane Bieber already for game one. That gives them a huge advantage over anybody they pitch against, but yet they're the lower seeded team. So, you know, they're going to have a gigantic advantage.
They will. And it's going to be, it would not surprise me if that matchup held. Wouldn't it surprise me to see them eliminate Tampa in the first round?
So, yeah, I'm trying to think. They're either going to get Tampa or they're going to get Minnesota. But either way, I mean, whichever one of those teams they get is going to be in trouble. You know, because, again, you know, you're going to get Shane Bieber, and then depending on how they set it up, yeah, right now they would play the Twins. You know, so then depends on, you know, would they go with the veteran Carrasco as the two guy, even though he's probably not their second best pitcher. He is a veteran guy. But, you know, they could come back with, you know, Plesac or, you know, their prospect McKenzie, who's been fantastic. And I'm drawing a blank. I think Savelli is the fifth guy. So, I mean, it's just, it's not good for these other teams in the American League, because there's no pitching staff like that matches. You know, the Blue Jays are pretty good. You know, they went out and added some guys, and the signing of Hyunjin Ryu was really huge. He may have been the best free agent signing, even though I'm sure Yankee fans are jumping up and down saying, what about Gerrit Cole? You know, so that could get rough, because they can go, you know, Ryu, Robbie Ray, Taj, you know, Tijan Walker, and, you know, I can't remember who else. I'm drawing a blank on who else they added to, you know, kind of plug in. So they, you know, they could be a rough out, but, you know, none of these other teams match. I mean, you go through and look, and, you know, everybody's got a top starter. Some teams have two. But to go 3-4-5, you're looking at the Indians and maybe the Dodgers, and a lot of the Dodgers' big studs are young prospects.
Yeah,
but they've pitched
exactly
well.
Right. Yeah, exactly right. Do you anticipate the opening round to be a low-scoring games?
You know, I think so, but it's tough to tell with the gassed-up baseball, you know, because, you know, any mistake is basically a home run now. You know, like I actually saw a guy inside out a ball over the right field fence off basically the handle of the bat. And you can't tell me that wasn't the baseball. So, you know, if they're still using these juiced up baseballs, we could get some high scoring games. But if they, you know, if they go back to what you would consider a normal baseball or an average baseball, I think pitching has a good chance to dominate, and we could get some real, you know, we could get some 1-0, 2-1 games, which would be pretty exciting. But I know baseball thinks it needs runs, so unfortunately I don't see it happening.
Well, the purists, of course, like the competitive low-scoring games, but I don't think too many fans think that way anymore. Yeah, you're right, though, about the ball being jacked, because I remember seeing a couple of times this season a batter getting fooled and maybe one hands the ball and hits it out to right field for a home run.
Yeah, there have been some embarrassing home runs this year. You know, and it's weird because nobody's talking about it. I haven't heard one network mention it.
No, they're not going to either.
Well, you know, last year they talked all about it. You know, they kept talking about how there was something different about the baseball, but this year nothing, you know, nothing's been said.
You think it's because of the shortened season?
Yeah, you know, I think, and, you know, mostly because, you know, you obviously get your news from the MLB Network if you're looking for baseball news. I think they're at a point where with everything going on, they're trying to stay away from anything that would be negative, unless it's like forced to be talked about. You know, like, have you heard much about the Astros or the Red Sox scandals after the punishments were issued? Because I haven't heard anything.
I haven't heard a thing.
So,
nothing at all. Yeah, they're keeping
the only thing I heard was somebody was talking about A.J. Hinch being the front runner for the Tigers job when his suspension expires here at the, you know, the end of, what, October or November or whatever.
Well, I guess they don't, the management who's looking for replacements don't seem to care that he was suspended.
No, well, you know, the one, obviously, plus side for him going is, you know, it wasn't really him who came up with the cheating scandal. It was the players. But remember, the players got, you know, what was it, immunity to tell Major League Baseball what happened. So they couldn't come down on the players, so they came down on the people they could, which was the coaches and the front office.
Yeah, are you surprised, by the way, regarding the what happened during the cheating incident? I don't think it was as hyped as much as I thought it would be by the various networks and ESPN and everybody else. They didn't seem to really go into it like they would have done, say, in the Black Sox era, for example, when there was serious cheating going on.
Yeah, and it's weird that, you know, they didn't cover it really at all. And, you know, and I'm just wondering if maybe because it didn't have to do with, you know, drugs or steroids or whatever, and it was just guys banging a garbage can, that they just didn't care. You know, because,
yeah,
like, I mean, how many people have you heard that say cheating happens in baseball all the time?
Well, if you can steal a sign under legitimate ways, I don't think the fans would be upset about that because, hey, the guy was smart enough to figure out what the guy was doing and caught it and took advantage of it, but not what happened. That's not actually what happened.
No, yeah, these guys used the video monitor to cheat is what, you know, what they did, and that's completely wrong.
Exactly. And I'm sure when you caught in college, and you may have caught a sign or two just by being an astute baseball player.
Oh, yeah, you know, we were always looking. You know, if you get on second base, your job is to figure out the signs. And, you know, as a catcher, you have a general idea of what they're doing. You know, is it the first sign, the second sign, the third sign? What's he using as an indicator? You know, it's not difficult to figure out if you're the one who's doing it for your team. You know, of course, the object of baseball is you don't get out to second base all that much. So,
right.
it's not the easiest thing to do. But, yeah, you know, if you can help your guys out, you help them out. So,
if a catcher starts out the inning with a double, okay? You think it's going to be automatic that the pitcher and the catcher are going to have a little concept, but discuss sign changing?
Yeah, you know, they normally do. You know, the tough part now is with the limited trips to the mound, you got to be careful. So a lot of times, you know, they'll do it ahead, you know, just so they kind of know, and then he can just kind of yell to them, you know, that they're going to the other set of signs. Because, you might need to save that trip to the mound or, you know, whatever comes up for whatever reason.
I noticed watching the game last night, one of the games, is that the umpire was keeping track of the mound visits, a little clicker pointer with him. What happens if he makes a mistake and there's six mound visits inadvertently instead of five? What could happen, if anything?
Well, they've got the video review. They could always go back to, you know, if he's off for some reason or, you know, hopefully more than one umpire is keeping track. So, you know, there should be fail safes in, you know, the ways to get around that and just not have it be a flat out mistake like that, or at least you hope there are.
if they discovered a mistake and it's too late and the game is over, what penalty could they impose afterwards?
Monetary? Not much they
monetary?
Can. Obviously, you know, the team can protest. You know, but I can't remember the last time a protest was won. And then, you know, I mean, an umpire can be fined like anybody, you know, like any manager or, you know, player. So, you know, they could assess that. But again, it doesn't change the outcome of the game.
No.
And, you know, hopefully one mound visit wouldn't make a difference in a game.
I can vaguely remember one instance, and I can't remember the year and the teams. They actually replayed a game from the point in time in which a protest was upheld. And that's the only time I can ever remember it, but I just can't remember the name, the teams involved, or the year it took place.
Yeah, well, there actually was a time where I believe Dick Williams was the manager of the then, they were the California Angels, and he accidentally listed Nolan Ryan as his starting pitcher, and Ryan was on, it was the DL at that time, not the IL, the DL. They actually had to activate Ryan, and he had to come in and throw one pitch before they could take him out of the game just because of an honest mistake, because he officially turned in the lineup that way.
Yeah, that's an interesting story. I don't remember reading about that one, but it's quite unusual. And you know, you worry about a pitcher on the injury list, I'm saying IL now, of course, instead of DL, throwing a pitch and re-injuring his arm even worse than what it was. I mean, you don't want that to happen.
You know, and I mean, I don't remember what kind of pitch it was or how they did it, or, you know, I mean, he could have underhanded it or rolled it up there or whatever he had to do. But, yeah, he legitimately had to throw one pitch before he could be replaced. So it was just an odd scenario with the way it worked out.
Well, that had to be an embarrassing mistake on Williams' part.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, hugely embarrassing. So.
And this guy was always known as a great student of the game, too.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, just, you know, an honest mistake, you know, was all it was, you know, and it was kind of like, whoops. So.
I remember an instance in the, of course, the Cubs, as usual, were an also-ran, and the team they were playing was also a 7th or 8th place team. And the team they were playing ran out of catchers, believe it or not. And the manager of the Cubs at the time was Phil Cavaretta. I'm sure you've heard of Phil Cavaretta, good hitter too, of course. Had a long career with the Cubs. He allowed the player who had left the game, the catcher, to come back in, and the public address system, I'll never forget this, made an announcement saying the catcher has been allowed to return to the game thanks to the courtesy of manager Phil Cavaretta. Of course, when it's very interesting. And of course, when the 7th and 8th teams are running up the string towards the end of the season, I guess it didn't make much difference.
Well, you know, there's actually been talk about making that a rule now, you know, allowing a catcher reentry, you know, for the sake of, you know, say like you pull your catcher and the guy you put in gets hurt, you know, you would be allowed to put the other guy back into the game. There's been talk about that for a number of years. It just hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, and if it happens, the first thought that occurs to you is this. The catcher re-enters the game with the new rule, comes in and hits a game-winning hit.
Yeah.
So,
you know.
You can imagine the controversy that will happen after that one occurring.
You know, I mean, well, at least that's what you would hope would happen, right? I mean, if you're putting the guy
back
in.
Yeah, well, you want something significant to happen if that rule were ever put into place.
You know, yeah, because, you know, a lot of, you know, there are a lot of teams who don't have the luxury like the Cubs do of having a guy who catches plays left field. You know, like the Rangers have one, you know, he's been playing third base regularly, kind of falafel. But, you know, there aren't a ton of those guys left anymore that, you know, can still catch without it being a huge issue.
Yeah, and as you well know, as we discussed, it's by far the most demanding position in the game is catching.
So yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's, you know, pitching obviously is quite difficult. But yeah, catching, you know, it's probably harder than, you know, the whole everything else. So
yeah, it always amazes me when you've seen it happen time and time again. There's a foul tip goes off the catcher's mask or off his shoulder, and 9 out of 10 times they'll just shake it off and continue. There won't be any delay. They'll just continue the game. Sometimes the umpire will take pity on the catcher and maybe brush off the home plate or do something that would allow him to recoup a little bit. But most of the time they just suck it up and continue playing.
Yeah, well, you know, the good thing is the umps genuinely know when the guy needs that, you know, minute or whatever to kind of collect himself. So, yeah, you know, they step out and clean off the plate, or they put a new baseball in play, or, you know, something just to take the minute there to let him catch his breath or, you know, shake the cobwebs, so to speak. So, you know, yeah, but it, you know, trust me, it's no fun getting in, hit in the face with a foul ball.
No.
Even though you have the mask.
I can imagine at the end of the season that the catcher, the full-time catcher, was loaded with bumps and bruises and black and blue marks. And it takes him quite a while to recuperate from all those injuries that have accumulated over the season.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's why, you know, you look at a guy like Yadier Molina, who's been, you know, doing it for how long, and I know his numbers may not scream Hall of Fame, but just the fact that he has caught so many games and he's been so good at it defensively, he should easily be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
In my opinion, he should definitely be. By the way, did you notice that, was it yesterday he got his 2,000 hit?
Yeah. So, you know what I mean? You know, then there's a guy like Buster Posey who isn't too far behind him. I know he opted out of this year, but, you know, he's been a warrior back there, even coming back after that horrible broken leg to still catch. And,
yeah,
you know, you don't – there aren't too many of those guys left.
Yeah, he's a – Molina is a true professional. I mean, you have to admire the guy. I give him a lot of credit.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, you kind of look around and, you know, a lot of the guys who do it are – you know, you almost want to say journeymen. You know, they're in some kind of platoon. You know, it's difficult for, you know, a team to find that, you know, number one stud catcher. And, you know, that's another thing where the Cubs are lucky. They actually have two number one catchers, you know, because Victor Caratini could probably start for almost any other team that doesn't have Molina behind the plate.
Probably so.
So, you know, and
that's all having that great a year offensively.
You know, I wonder why he's still here. You know, because there's a lot of value there in that, you know, you're giving a team a starting catcher. That's worth quite a bit. But, you know, they seem to hang on to him.
Yeah, and, well, considering all the catching that's going on, the regular catching, do you think that the average catcher is does not hit as well as some of the other members of his team, and they'll still have a long career because of their defensive capabilities? They give him more leeway as a hitter because he's a catcher?
Yeah, you know, if you can throw base runners out or you can handle a pitching staff, you know, you can look at a guy like Jeff Mathis, who's probably about a 210 career hitter. He's been around a long time because he's really good defensively and he knows how to handle a pitching staff. You know, he always finds a spot.
And he's had a nice lucrative career because of that.
Yeah. So, you know, and it's weird because, you know, it kind of works with, like, I just heard somebody mention Ryan Fitzpatrick in the NFL. You know, he's been a journeyman quarterback who I believe has had a 12 or 14-year career because he's Ivy League educated. He knows how to run a team. He can learn the offense. And he's made about $70 or $80 million in his career just for being a smart guy and knowing what to do. And, you know, these catchers can do that as well.
Yeah. And that's a good point about those journeyman quarterbacks. There are a few in the league, and don't get into games very often, but they seem to have no problem catching on with the team and taking it easy for the course of the 16 games, and maybe they'll get in for one or two games, and maybe they just won't at all, but still collect a nice paycheck.
Yeah, well, you know, like the one player in baseball that I always used to kind of, you know, I don't want to say laugh about, but just I always thought had the best job in the world was Bill Plummer, who spent years on the Cincinnati Reds as Johnny Bench's backup. Now, you know, Bench caught about 150 games a year, if not more.
Yeah.
So,
he did.
Plummer was called on for, you know, 10 games a year. I got to catch, but they're paying me. So.
Didn't they eventually move Bench to first base? I'm trying to remember now.
First base, third base, outfield. They tried a little bit of everything with him to extend his career. Here, I looked up Jeff Mathis for us because I was curious. This is his 16th Major League Baseball season in total and 15th as a full-time player.
Wow.
And his career batting average? His career batting average, .194.
Wow.
But he's played 16 years in the majors.
Well, he must have a heck of an accurate arm tossing guys out of second base then.
And he's really good handling the pitching staff. So.
And I'm sure he's an expert at framing also, which is also, he has to be.
And he's made just a little under $22 million in his career. So.
That's it? That's nothing compared to. That's chump change compared to some of these other guys.
Yeah, but still not a bad gig if you can get it. You know.
Yeah, you'd have settled for that, I'm sure.
So, but here I also checked in on Bill Plummer. The most games he ever appeared in a season was 65 for the 1975 Big Red Machine. His career average was 188. But yet they won. What did they win? 3 World Series while he was there?
I would think so. The Big Red Machine, yeah, they were dominant for a long time. So I guess they could afford to have a guy with a 180. They could afford to have a guy with a 180, a bench player with a 188 average with the kind of offensive power they had overall.
Yeah, you know, and he hung around for 10 years, you know, in the big leagues.
Yeah, it's but I don't think you'd see that though with another ball player, a third baseman or a first baseman or an outfielder with that kind of stats to have that kind of a longevity in the major leagues.
No, the only way you're hanging around then is if you're hitting 50 homers. You know, so.
Yeah, hitting 50 homers and hitting .195.
Yeah. You know, that's the only way you're hanging around then. But I wanted to check something because you mentioned it here. Come on, where is it? Here it is. Yeah, Johnny Bench played 195 games at third base, 145 games at first base, and then he actually split 111 games between 3 outfield positions. He actually appeared in center field in 2 games. But 55 in left, 55 in right. Obviously, the majority of a catcher where he caught in 1,742 games. So,
talk about an immensely talented ball player.
Yeah.
Not only if he played all those multiple defensive positions, he could hit a ton too.
So, yeah, he was definitely, you know, possibly the best catcher to ever play the game. You know, when it comes down to it. But, yeah, you know, led the National League in home runs twice, 45, hit 45 one year, hit 40 the other year, 3 times in RBIs. You know, he was a .267 career hitter, but, you know, his last couple of years, he hit .258 and .255, so that brought him down a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, 17 years in the majors.
Yeah, immensely talented ball player. And they had a great team. They had great teams in those years. And by the way, they're playing very well lately too, and they still have a chance of making the playoffs for this year.
Yeah, get in. And not to mention, you know, he won the MVP twice and 10 Gold Gloves as a catcher. So.
Yeah, heck of a Hall of Fame career for sure.
So no surprise that, you know, he went in the very first time his name came up on the Hall of Fame ballot. So.
And I bet you there were a few of the sports writers that didn't vote him in immediately. There's always a few, right? That don't make it unanimous. I don't know what these guys are thinking of this. It always surprised me.
Yeah.
When it wasn't unanimous for some of his caliber.
Yeah, you know, there's always somebody who has a grudge for something, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, just kind of, you know, and kind of, unfortunately, that's kind of how it goes. And then those guys hold it and, you know, carry it with them and all that other garbage. So, you know,
certainly they weren't being objective when they didn't include them in the first ballot.
No, but, you know, I mean, there's how many players, you know, you could go through and, you know, ask why didn't this guy get 100% of the vote?
Yeah.
You know, so it's just so, you know, so difficult when you look, I mean, you know, Tom Seaver is obviously the first name that comes to mind because he had the highest percentage until, what was it, Rivera just went in with 100%. He just went in with a perfect ballot. So, you know.
We knew that was going to happen. It was an automatic first round Hall of Famer. But that.
Yeah,
that's,
you know,
you
wonder what a guy's sitting there looking at his ballot going, you know, I left Tom Seaver off because, well, why did you leave Tom Seaver off?
maybe he just didn't like him, you know, and once again, that should not enter into a selection.
Yeah. Well, you know, and then there's guys like Willie Mays, who a lot of people look at as probably the guy who's actually the greatest player of all time, another guy who wasn't 100% going in. How do you not vote for Willie Mays?
Yeah.
Or Hank Aaron?
It's staggering. It's staggering. And, of course, I'm sure they got into the high 90% anyway when it was all said and done.
So, but, yeah, you know, even so, you know, I mean, or you look back, like, you know, when they had to start putting people in, you know, granted, I get it. Ty Cobb was a jerk and he wasn't a good person, but he's one of the greatest baseball players of all time. You know, he's not 100%. Babe Ruth's not 100%. Lou Gehrig, Mickey Mantle. You know, you just start going over the list going, what the hell were these guys thinking? And how do they get votes?
Yeah, it is pretty amazing, but, you know, obviously they were in the high 90 percentile, but you wonder why. What the sports writers were thinking when they didn't select them in the first. Strange.
You know, because, like, I can understand, you know, like, if I had a ballot, I wouldn't vote for Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens or, you know, Rafael Palmeiro or even Sammy Sosa. You know, any of those guys involved in the steroids, I'm not voting for any of them because they cheated the game. But, you know, I mean, you know, if you want to put them in and give them an asterisk. You know, I mean, Pete Rose is the all-time hit leader. You can put him in the Hall of Fame. Just give him, you know, give him an explanation on his plaque that, you know, he wasn't voted in. It was awarded to him, and this is why he wasn't voted in. So.
Yeah. Another not very pleasant person, though, Pete Rose.
You know, well, you know, unfortunately, there's, you know, a lot of those guys through every sport, you know, that you run into. But I did see that, you know, and I'm sure this was no surprise. Tom Brenneman officially resigned today as the Reds broadcaster. No shock there, right?
Right. No. Well, we knew that was coming eventually.
You know, yeah. I don't really think he had a choice. It's not like they were going to give him his job back. And, you know, hopefully he saved his money because he had a long career as a broadcaster, so he won't have any issues.
Are you saying he won't come into Chicago or replace Lancaster?
Yeah, I doubt it. You think anybody even hired sniffs at hiring him, even maybe a couple years down the road?
Well, you know, I always say we're a forgiving nation, and maybe he'll be forgiven in 2 or 3 years, and they'll kind of sneak him back in somewhere.
Yeah, maybe. You know, who knows? But
knows.
Before I forget here, and before we run out of time, Stu had his own prediction, and then of course I have to ask him for his prediction. But you had the Cubs are playing the White Sox at good old G-Rate Field to wrap up the season. It's a 3-game series. You had a prediction how that was going to go. Did you want to tell everybody what you were thinking was going to happen?
Well, I'm thinking of White Sox sweep, of course, and but I'm a little bit hesitant about doing that because Yu Darvish is pitching tonight, but he has not been all that great either. So I'm going to stick with my original prediction of a sweep for the White Sox, primarily because the Cubs cannot hit their way out of a paper bag. I mean, if you get 2 hits against Pittsburgh and lose 3 in a row to one of the worst teams in the majors, and a team that had come in losing 13 out of the last 14, it's hard to find much confidence in even considering 1 out of 3 games this weekend for the Cubs.
Yeah, well, you know, and then, you know, your other predictions, you're 1-1 now. You got the – it was a little dicey and probably a little closer than I thought, but you got the Bears game right last week. This week they are in Atlanta to take on the Falcons. The Falcons are – yeah, they are 0-2, but they've been putting up some points. The Bears are 2-0. The Falcons are 0-2. How you got this working out for the Bears on Sunday?
Well, I have to say in all objectivity that the Bears will be 2-1 after this Sunday's game against Atlanta.
Yeah, I'm looking here. Yeah, the Falcons have scored 64 points in their 2 games. That's 20 more than the Bears have scored. So,
I would suspect that even though the Bears are 2-0 and Atlanta is 0-2, that Atlanta will be a favorite for this Sunday's game.
You know, I'm trying to remember if I saw the betting line or how that worked out, but I don't remember. I would think at home, I wouldn't be surprised if they're the perennial 3-point favorite, like a lot of teams are. So,
of course, being home and with no fans, it makes a difference.
Yeah, it's definitely a kind of a different scenario, but there's no travel involved or anything like that. So, there's still a small advantage to being at home.
Yeah, I would think so. But I definitely think the Bears will lose this game. Their pass defense has been sporadic at best, and Trubisky to me is still Trubisky. So, which is why in those combinations, I will have to go along with Atlanta winning the game.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be surprised at all if Atlanta ends up winning. I think the big thing is I know Julio Jones is dinged up, so it may depend a lot on if he's going to end up playing. I just don't know if the Bears can compete offensively with a team like the Falcons. So.
No, is Mac going to play?
That I haven't heard. I haven't heard an update yet, so I'll go look now while we get out of here.